Hello and welcome to The Dive, Season 4, Episode 32. We are mid-playoffs. We're into playoffs. We got past the 7th and 8th seed. You know, that was really controversial, including them. Now we can for sure say that they're gone.
And we can for sure.
Both gone in 3-0s, so...
Well, but we needed them. They saved Doublelift's career, as he said. You know, if without those extra teams in the lower bracket, you know, just poof.
Yeah, he's definitely thanking his lucky stars that it is a double elimination bracket. Because if you want to get right into it, Mark, then let's get right into it. That TSM series, the first 0-3 where they lost to Golden Guardians, Doublelift said it himself. A lot of people were already saying that was the worst series of his career.
Yeah.
And probably the worst showing that that he has had. Yeah.
So do you guys think that's overreaction? Because to me, game three was like the worst game I can remember from him in NA, like as far as playoff wise. But I actually felt like he was playing pretty well in the first two games, at least in laning phase and stuff. And as far as like, you know, being in losing matchups, and he's playing, you know, alongside a rookie who's kind of in his first ever LCS playoff series. Like, I felt like it was okay. The game three left a really bad taste in everyone's mouth. He played bad. And there was also the TP play, which like really was like a stinker. It just game three in general was horrible. But like I felt like people took game three and acted as though that was how he played for the whole series.
I mean,
not saying it's good, but
game three was worse. But I still don't think it's an overreaction to say, you know, it's the worst series, you know, that he has ever played. He made a lot of mistakes in game number one and game number two, and that teleport one that everyone pointed out was actually the second one too,
but yeah, not in that series. It was
earlier in the year.
A week or two ago or whatever.
The only other one I would submit, I think, I mean, he played in relegations because CLG lost to
It's hard to remember some of the CLG
but series. I would say the one that I remember being really, you know, bad from him was against us, Team Liquid, spring 2015. And that's where the whole auto spacing meme came from, because Piglet dumpstered him. And he was like, my God, Piglet's auto spacing is just too good. And everyone's like, what are you talking? Like, everyone kind of knows what you're talking about, but it was not a term anyone ever used. And so he got memed a lot for that.
Yeah. I actually want to jump on this because I always thought it was so hilarious. There's multiple topics, right? So one of them, orb walking, the original term way back from Dota before League of Legends even existed, when there were these items in Dota that were actual orbs. And I forget which champ, but there was like a champion that also had like an orb walking ability, but getting your auto off, you don't need that full time, and you can cancel some of the later parts of the animation and use the in-between time to gain distance and walk. That's the general thing that allows you to be better. You chase down people or kite people better. That is true in League of Legends. There's an auto attack windup. You just have to get that off. Then you can cancel the rest of it, and you can use the rest of your time for movement. That is one thing. There is also using range discrepancies in AD carry champions, most notably with Caitlyn, because her range is so much longer. Get an auto off outside of your opponent's range and don't allow them to close the overlapping range to get an auto off on you, you know, either with slows or movement speed or anything like that. And so you're constantly playing on this auto attack range discrepancy. And those are both interesting and really cool actual strategies. But the auto spacing meme that actually exploded just meant nothing and was so hilarious that everyone just got on board.
Yeah. Anyone who's had as long as a career as Doublelift is going to have some stinker performances. So, they're pretty few and far between. And this was the first loss in a best of five and 13 best of fives in a row, you know.
And this one was really notable because they got stomped, right?
Yeah.
Like, well, again, I mean, they got 3-0'd. The results were stomped. The first two games were pretty close. First two games were, you know, could have gone either way. You know, Golden Guardians did play better and like pull it out. The last game was definitely a stomp.
Yeah.
You don't think the first two games could have gone either way?
The backdoor one, which I think was game two, was pretty close. Golden Guardians, I think that was also the one where they lost their gold.
The first game, TSM was actually in control, and then they lost that one. They lost two bad fights in a row, right? Like, it felt like they had kind of like gotten into a decent spot. Like, both one and two, I think, were winnable. Either way, they got 3-0'd, right?
Yeah.
They got 3-0'd. They played like absolute doo-doo in game three. It was definitely for sure one of, if not the worst performance of Double F's career. I think that's completely fair to say, especially considering, you know, the high standards of this player and how dominant he has looked. It's not what people expected. You know, he's against a new guy in an FBI, and people expected him to trash him.
And, I mean, as much as you're saying, like, the first two games weren't that bad, you're still first picking Caitlin, and you're getting counterpick on support.
Yeah, but is
wanted,
that...
They wanted to be lane dominant, though,
or is that on treats? Because to me, I felt like there was a lot of like misplaced kind of like hate or like criticism towards Doublelift when I felt like treats was hard trolling in game one and two, and also didn't have the ability to answer any of the support picks.
I mean, yes, that's on both of them, but also, I mean, I think people just don't realize that like FBI is just straight up the best laner in the league.
He's really good,
in the marksman position. So like, I think it was a bit of a wake-up call to fans who had kind of had their eyes shut to FBI and how good he was. I also don't think Doublelift played well, like great in laning phase. I don't think he was playing insane. And then the support counterpick thing was obviously the biggest issue with it.
But, yeah. I mean, they're losing 2v2 in all three games, right?
It's a super big thing to me because the supports determine a lot of the early stages of the lane. And if you don't pick, Karma or Lux or something that can have this pressure into a Morgana lane, then it greatly raises up the AD carry that's playing with that Morgana, right? And they had it for the first two games. They utilized it super well, FBI and Huhi, that is. And I think not enough credit really being given to how well the Golden Guardians play in this, and everybody's just so focused on TSM, the higher seed, how bad they're playing and how many mistakes they made, which they did, but honestly I think the Golden Guardians also really stepped up.
Yeah, their bottom lane is smurfing. Like, I'm not trying to take credit away from them at all. I think that they are incredible. I agree with Mark, they're the best laning duo in the league. Again, I think like FBI is great, don't get me wrong, but again, I think it's both situations where people get so focused on the marksman player that they forget about the support more. Yeah. I know who he has been getting credit, but people are like, FBI best laner in the league, you know, like, and I hear that so much, and I don't hear people talking about who he's laning prowess as much. People are giving credit to who he, don't get me wrong, like that is popping up more, but like I just think in general, when you're talking about the laning prowess of a marksman, like it has to be the lane it duo, because I think the support has actually more of an impact on the laning phase than the marksman does. And Huhi has been smurfing it in a lot of these lanes, even back in the regular season. You know, he's playing aggressively. He's willing to counterpick and pick aggressively. And like their strategy even coming into the series was partially to go for these blind picks with the assumption that treats wouldn't be confident enough to have an answer. And they were right. And it paid off big time.
Yeah, I just want to like, so there's a scenario, right? And because they played Morgana two times, this is scenario literally occurred, multiple issues where you see, oh, the announcer in the game is like, boom, headshot, you know, FBI kills, you know, treats or something like that. But how the announcing actually goes is like, oh my God, who he hits the binding. Then you put the trap on it. Then you get the headshot. Then you chase him down. Then you get this kill. Huhi, Morgana W. They're pushing the wave. Oh, they get the early level two. They kill the minion. Boom, he threads the needle. They like the a lot of this, you know, support work. we could kind of change the in-game thing for like big assist.
Yeah. I think
assist, legendary assist streak. Yeah, legendary assist streak.
I also think like as much as we hype FBI in lane, he's so good outside of it too. Game one had that flash forward, and like multiple people in Golden Guardians played that team fight well. Closer was having a rough game, but he had a good alt to pull them away. You know, double of tunnel vision, I think, which is another reason people are slamming him, because he didn't have a QSS to deal with the Mord, which I actually think is okay if you think you're going to play well and like, you know, can kite him out. But then he like runs forward into the teleport, self stuns himself to get the ult on Demonte, and like there's a bunch of these problems. Bad. And during that time, FBI is popping off and flashing in. And yes, you know, big binding by Huhi. We already talked about Closer splitting up the fight. Haunster gets the solo kill. Everyone played well, but I just don't think there's many AD carries in the league who, after like getting, you know, flashed on, are going to then flash in the other way. Most people just panic, like reaction flash out or something. So I think FBI gets a lot more of the credit, partially due to, you know, the insane stats and stuff like you're talking about, but he also does, you know, play quite well. And I have no problem overstating his contribution in a laning phase as he is such a young new player. Mm-hmm. I mean, James showed me, you know, on the desk, he was like, dude, you know, we weren't on camera. He's like, he only has 1900 Twitter followers. And we're all like, this is one of the best players in our league. Doesn't even have 2000 Twitter followers. Like, what the hell? And so we started that kind of Twitter campaign to try and get him more followers. Yeah. Cause it's like, this guy cannot be overstated right now because he's pretty far under the radar. So I don't mind maybe giving him a little bit of who he's credit right now.
And no, I understand this problem. I'm really excited for him. Like between him, Johnson, and Tactical, I am hyped for some new guys to the league, young guys in the league that are exciting marksman players. I want, you know, that conversation to be there. I want them to be, you know, battling and overtaking, you know, Doublelift and Zven and guys like having that competition at the top where you have this new wave of players that you're really excited about. I think that is awesome. I just think that somewhat due to the nature of Doublelift, you know, he is always going to get more positive when he does well and more negative when he does poorly, right? Mm-hmm. And I did think that Treats was pretty much non-existent in that series. You know, I remember when he was playing his bar game, I remember one ult he had landing and it was actually like arguable if it even helped. It was that tier two mid lane turret dive where they like already were killing the person and then he ulted them while they were killing him and then they killed him after still. His thresh game, you know, didn't really do anything. But either way, you know, they improved in the next series. We can kind of get into that a little bit. You know, Doublelift saying, hey, the lower bracket may have potentially saved his career. I think that's a little bit like melodramatic. It's not as though no one would ever have picked up Doublelift again.
Hey, man, he knows how to get a headline. I like it. I like it.
And I mean, he was still in the running for All Pro, right? Like he ended up being fourth in voting, but he was in there. So it's not as though that would be completely gone. But like I could see it like, you know, really damaging your reputation. And he obviously wants to make it to Worlds and there's high expectations. So I can see it through that point of view. But clearly he wasn't that happy with how they were playing and the whole team wasn't happy with how they were playing against Dignitas. Like he was talking about that as like beating Dignitas is the bare minimum, right? Like, you know, that they weren't really excited about how they even won, even though it was a 3-0. And I thought one of the things that was interesting was how much he was talking about, you know, he mentioned Treats, but really just, you know, them in general, TSM in general, how he felt like they were just playing nervous, right? They were playing scared. They're not willing to take trades that they were normally taking. So as a result, they're kind of just sitting back in lanes and getting pushed in. And I think that did somewhat show itself like in the previous series too against Golden Guardians, where it's like, you know, if you're not willing to play these trades aggressively and actually like go at your opponents and you just sit back on the Bard and the Thresh and whatever, then there's no way to win against the Morgana, right? And I think that was an interesting discussion. So that's something that is tough to change though, right? Like it's like, how do you build confidence in a week, right? Like you have to hope that your practice and your training, you just kind of like ingrain that you need to play, take that aggressive stance, but it's tough.
Yeah. I mean, you end up in kind of a downward spiral and this is true for, you know, anybody can relate to this. If you play League of Legends in like a competitive mindset, even in ranked, when you start to lose rank game after rank game after rank game, you start to question even your own play. And are you even good anymore? Speaking from experience, I'm like, have I lost it? You know, I can't get back to, you know, my previous rank. You know, what am I doing wrong? And so many things start to come in into it that it does make you change your play style. And that it can be a slippery slope for professional players. Confidence is huge. We talk about it every single year when we go to Worlds, for every single dominant team from every region, and people going up against them always are talking about, okay, you know, you have to turn nameplates off or you have to play with confidence, because if you start to give up free moves to your opponents, assuming, oh, they are so good, they must be invading me for a reason. And then you look at the VOD review and you're like, oh no, actually it was just their support all by himself getting free vision in our red quadrant. We could have easily killed him, but now they end up with two deep wards and they see every single next move that we have for the next 3 minutes and they actually end up snowballing. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you visualize, if you think your opponent is already that much better than you and playing that much better than you, you don't contest them on these little areas where you could gain an advantage. And it's really kind of disheartening to hear some of our players that have been our best players in the league for so long having fallen to that level and starting to question themselves like this, because Doublelift also says he knows and all of them know that Bjergsen is carrying them.
I was about to go, yeah.
Is the ending of that interview is just, he's just like, yeah, we all know Bjergsen's carrying, and it would feel so bad for us if we get knocked out of playoffs with him playing like this. So there's so much just as far as the mental game that they have to correct here, making a bottom of the bracket run. This is double elimination, but you're now in the bottom where, you know, they have to win every single series here, to make it to the end.
Do or die. And looking forward, like, I think Bjergsen is actually playing insane. Also, Hanser talked about it in his interview where he's like, our strategy was stop Bjergsen, because if Bjergsen can't carry, they're going to lose the series. And that was their mindset. And I think that is something that TSM has to figure out. In their victory over Dignitas, they played three different carry comps. They had a mid carry comp, a jungle carry comp, and then a top lane carry comp. And yeah, you can beat Dignitas with all three of those styles, but I'm worried about when TL or Golden Guardians drops down because they get the loser of that series. Are you going to be able to execute three different styles against these teams who more or less have one play style that they're honing in on? Because Broken Blade is inconsistent. You have these concerns that we've already kind of hit on the bot lane. Spica as well is young and does seem to have some hit or miss games as much as he can pop off. And so I'm a little concerned that they don't have a super defined play style as much as like Bjergsen's hard carrying. It's like, yeah, but then he plays set games and like you can carry on set in the sense where you're making insane setup plays, but you're still setting someone else up. And if that guy doesn't show up that game, you just get popped.
Yeah. You're a force multiplier, right? It's like, you know, if you make a perfect engage and you're like, your Caitlyn is popping off, then it's like, you're really enabling them. Right. They already have a lead and then they snowball and they win the game. But like, if your carries are all having a crappy game, everyone has played those tank style champions where it's like, you're playing Malphite, you get a 5-man and all, and then you immediately lose the fight because all your carries are worthless that game. And that's kind of how, you know, that set game felt a little bit, for Bjergsen. You know, also credit to Hanser. I think, you know, in a lot of his Mordekaiser games, you know, he was actually shutting down Bjergsen with alts. He was shutting down junglers with alts, you know, so that was part of it too. But, you know, my feeling is really that TSM has to be able to step up in the bottom lane. I think that you can't get run over in the bottom lane like that, because I think that, you know, that your marksman doing well is the key to allowing more mid lane flexibility, right? The set pick works if your bot lane's doing well. And I think that requires Doublelift to play better. And I think that also requires Streets to have more flexibility and to play better, right? You know, they can't just lose to blind pick Morgana and stuff every game. That's just not going to work. They won't get further.
The sad thing was it happened in the Dignitas series again. They kind of dealt with struggling.
Well, they blind picked Morgana and then they lost to the Karma. Right. Which is, they did okay in that lane, but yeah, I hear you.
I mean, they were pretty pushed in. The rest of the map was doing well, so it didn't matter. Yep. I think what happened.
And that's a perfect illustration though of what they should have been doing to Golden Guardians, right? There's very clearly like Ashe Karma beats Caitlyn Morgana in lane. That is a winning 2v2 because all of a sudden you have like two people pushing the wave and you have heavy poke. The like Black Shield no longer matters. What are you gonna stop? The Tether? Who cares? You know? Yeah. So you know, I think that was a good illustration of why we were talking about, you know, the lack of flexibility from Treats and from their bottom lane in the previous thing. You know, the bright side for TSM fans, it's very clear that there's an issue there. So hopefully they can fix that.
When it's one pick, you can, and you have a week to figure out what your answer is to it, you should be able to.
Yep. It was really cool to also see. Oh, go ahead, Kobe.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the things people were talking about coming in late as for TSM answers, like, oh, then they did play the Karma. They did pick it up. Oh, then Doublelift did buy a QSS, but you know, later, game afterwards, yeah. Next time you don't want to net into a Mordekaiser and get
I'll try that one,
right?
Again. I'm not
honestly, yeah, you don't want to do that anytime, but it's a lot of these little learnings and little mistakes that have to be picked up very quickly.
Yeah.
And they don't have any more time left. I think that's the big thing.
Yep, against any of the absolute best teams, one of those mistakes can sometimes end a game, right? Because one big team fight can be bare and whatever. But also, you know, we saw some really cool picks coming out in the first week. That was something exciting for me. I will say, as much as the 7th and 8th place teams got clapped, and, you know, that was a little bit underwhelming, I have actually really enjoyed the idea that there is no World's Gauntlet, that there's no, like, fallback plan for the teams. It has made every series feel more impactful for me. Like I was still actually really excited for those lower bracket matchups as much as people are memeing 7th, 8th, because it's like, well, if you lose, that's it. You're not only out of the LCS, you're out of Worlds. There's no backup plan. You must perform now. So it does add a little bit more gravity, I feel like, to some of the series. And it was really cool to see, you know, Swain come out. We saw a bunch of Hecarim games. We saw the Ziggs pick. We're seeing some innovation there, I think, which is really exciting. And now that there's more 1016 games, like LPL is on 1016 for their playoffs, you know, you're seeing a lot of Lucian. You're seeing some different variations coming out in other leagues. So I'm really excited to see the continuation of the meta developing, because it does feel like there's opportunities for a lot of different stuff to continue to like evolve and come out, which could get some teams some playoff wins.
Yeah, kind of like we. Go ahead, Mark.
I was going to get us into the EG games. I don't know if that's where you were going.
I was just going to say, because we kind of talked about it last time about, you know, the patch being so quick on playoffs and teams having to adapt. But I like that it is like more intense prep for Worlds. I like that mm-hmm. we're putting pressure on teams to, in super important series, to have a new patch and try and get things quickly. And I have a lot of respect for the teams that did it that quickly and did have success. Everyone's like, oh, what is Ziggs? Ziggs broken, blah, blah, blah. And you're like, well, we haven't seen Ziggs in so long. And Demonte has the confidence after, you know, like 3 or 4 days between games that they had to, oh, now we're on 1016. I'm picking up Ziggs. We're going to use him to destroy towers. That's what the champion is supposed to do, is destroy towers. And boom, 3-0, right?
Backdoor.
And Power of Evil, he's like, oh, I've been saving the Swain pick for a long time. Into Galio, counter this composition with specific strengths here of these unique champions. That those are the types of things that we need for our teams to have success at Worlds. Those types of counter picks and innovation and kind of alacrity with picking up and changing and being adaptable.
One of the teams breaking out new stuff was EG with the Hecarim mm-hmm. top. Freak thinks it's absolutely busted. I don't know
so, if he showed that. It is absolutely busted.
yeah.
I think not in that series.
I think series. Freak has been tunneling very, very hard on solo queue win rates for literally all things. Matchups and just individual champions and stuff. And it is a good source of data. And it is hard data that we can use over, you know, big sample sizes. But with the same token, throughout the history of pro play, we have very often had 40% win rate solo queue champions be must pick in professional play, because the way that you play at that level, the trading, the matchup is different in some cases. I do like it as a baseline. And that is one of the first areas where I go to look for ideas for counters. And I've even brought them up in the past. And there was like one Jax one where Azale was like, oh, that's even only 49%. It's not actually a winning matchup, but, you know, looking for discrepancies in these statistics and trying to then dig deeper than the win rate to find out why is this finding success and in what area, because win rate only is one thing.
Yeah.
Might be a big winning lane, but then have a terrible win rate against it. And you just need to figure out how to turn this winning lane aspect, which in solo queue is not going to give you a win in the game, but in professional play and when you're coordinated, you can actually use the strong point of this champion kit or this interaction in a different way to get you a victory. I think those are the next level things. And yes, I'm also spamming Hecarim in solo queue, and we're talking about the Hecarim pick. I think it is a very strong overall champion, and it's a good area to find these indicators. Then incorporating that and the specific strengths into a specific strategy is the key, rather than like, oh, blind picking it in all these different scenarios, or, you know, specifically knowing how you're going to utilize it.
Yeah. I mean, I think at the end of the day, like, I liked what you said about it, like informing your decisions, right? Like you don't just like autopilot highest win rate, pick highest win rate at every role, and now you have the best comp, right? That's not how League of Legends works, especially not in pro.
Strap a Shen on that Hecarim, you know, strap some globals in here. Get him
give him a Yumi too. give him the rocket boots.
Hell yeah.
but I do think that like at times, and this is I think Freak is, you know, is focused on it, because oftentimes there's things that are incredibly strong in solo queue and it just feels like it's being completely disregarded by pros, right? And especially in the past, people are like, well, that's not a pro pick, right? And we've learned kind of over time, well, guess what? If something's really strong in solo queue, probably is a pro pick. Maybe it's a situational pro pick, but like things can transition. And that's why, you know, I know he's talking a lot about it. I think Hecarim's really strong. And I think one of the things that's really interesting for me about Hecarim top is, this is my take. I don't know if you guys agree or not, but like, people say like, oh, like Hecarim top has a high win rate, but like, oh, that's like fraudulent because it's not that good in any lanes. The reason people are playing Hecarim top and doing well in solo queue is not because it trashes lanes. Hecarim doesn't slam a lot of matchups. It's because he is hard to punish in a lot of lanes now. Like he doesn't just get destroyed, and he's so good at team fighting. Like that is why I think he has a good win rate even from top. It's not about, oh my God, Hecarim into this is such a counter matchup. Even the kind of like famous Hecarim versus Aatrox matchup, you know, I talked to Licorice a lot about that in the past, and he was like, no, it's not even that good in an Aatrox in the 1v1. It's just that Aatrox can't kill me, and then I'm going to be popping off in team fights, right? And I think that is sometimes something that people lose track of, is that like sometimes the counter pick doesn't have to be a lane counter pick. It can be something that is just worth more in team fights.
Yeah, and I think that's a really important part to emphasize when we're bringing these things up. Also think that Hecarim is super well situated to dive stuff that's very popular in the meta right now, like Ashe, right?
Yep.
So but it also has
tank Hecarim, because that ain't killing anything.
Which brings us to Huni, and if he should be playing Hecarim given the team's play styles. That's
playing Hecarim if you don't have a Trinity Force?
If you have adaptive helmet and a Hexshrinker, no. That's my answer. In no situation is that the play. And that's where I think that like the blind picking discussion becomes interesting, right? Where it's like, I think blind picking Hecarim is okay if you're willing to flex at jungle, right? Like if you're going to do the set type situation and then they counter pick you top and then you just swap it, then I think that is more okay. But like, I think in a situation where you're going to be building full tank Hecarim, it's just better to just have Sion or Poppy or Ornn.
I don't think anyone thinks you should be building full tank Hecarim. I think he just did it because the rest of the team
he was getting trashed.
Yeah. I think so. What I actually want to talk about is EG and Huni and carries and what they should be doing, because I don't want to talk about Hecarim. Actually, it was supposed to be a transition, but then it turned into the whole topic.
Can't get just give us topics here, Mark. And give me an idea.
I'm gonna say one word, and I'm gonna see how long you guys go. Cog mid.
Oh,
no. I think the FlyQuest EG series was a lot closer than I thought it would be. But it weirdly didn't actually make me feel super good about either team, because I thought I was gonna be a lot hotter on FlyQuest, and then you have this kind of long series where they're losing to EG, but who also looks like they're kind of struggling with identity at the same time, because they're doing these Hecarim picks and trying to play through Huni and it's not working. And then they swap to the more playthrough Golden Glue play style. He had a great Orianna game. He has a great LeBlanc game where Shen's supporting. And then the lower bracket, after they lost that series, they kind of kept on with the more Golden Glue focused play style. And I think he played Shen the first two games in that matchup.
Mm-hmm. The Shen LeBlanc and then Shen something else, I can't remember.
Yeah, Shen LeBlanc, and then that was the weird one, Shen TF. They didn't really have a carry for that, like, or an early game plan, because then they also ran it with Ashe TK, so you just had kind of like a bunch of globals but nothing to play around.
Like side lanes,
yeah, but they didn't side lane forever because they fell behind and they were all down 30 CS, and Sven hard carried that game. So I felt great about Sven. Sven looked amazing until he
16
was
16 kill Graves.
Yeah, until he was put on the Sejuani. That might be. That's insane.
It's got to be up there. I remember Contracts had Contracts had the record at Worlds for most kills in a game on that Taliyah game. And I remember that was World, so it's much less sample size than a regular season type thing. That was like 14, but like it's got to be up there.
17 on Lee once.
So if you're talking Worldwide, I know there was at least one 19. LCS. I know there was at least a 19. Okay.
Is that the Peanut one you're talking about, where he was against, I think it was like the VCS?
So people always cite the Peanut one because he got like 14 kills in such a short amount of time. Yeah. And then I don't think he wasn't the peak. They were like, there was a different game that was 19. Oh,
okay. But I was Peanut, just thinking of LCS players, yeah.
Yeah. The Peanut one, he got the kills so quickly. Everyone was like, oh my God, this is a monster stomp.
Yeah, people should go back and watch those highlights.
Yeah, that's very hype. But I mean, I will say, as a positive spin for EG, I don't know if you guys remember, I was saying I thought EG was probably the worst team in playoffs coming into that week. So
I remember.
For me, that was like, hey, you're competitive against FlyQuest. Hey, you won a series in the lower bracket. You go, EG. Like, That was more than I was expecting from them. They weren't perfect. I still don't think that they're going to win the split, but that was a higher level than I thought they were going to bring, because I didn't think that they were going to be capable of being competitive against FlyQuest. I thought they were going to get run over because of some of these identity issues that, you know, you were kind of talking about, that they're struggling to figure out what is their way to play, who is their carry, what are they going to do? And I mean, at the very least, it's like they did get a couple of Shen wins. They had that Ornn game that Huni was losing lane, got solo killed, but they still won. You know, so it does feel like maybe that is the direction that they are going in. If they have figured out something with identity and kind of like stick to one direction, maybe that will, you know, spell good things for them going forward. But I will say, I think that EG has stepped up in a way, right? Because they are playing, I think, a lot better than I was expecting, given their last few weeks of performance in the regular season, where they really, you know, look like a mess. Like they're like, what, 3-7 in last 10, something like that.
Yeah, they were tied for second to worst. Like it was CLG, and then I think it was like C9 EG, or yeah, they might even been worse than EG or yeah. C9.
C7. They were worse than C9 because C9 got some wins at the end.
Yeah.
From this series, the biggest changes to me, because I already was like, all right, I'm very confident in Bang. And I was confident, despite not seeing him play a lot of the more lane dominant aggressive carries. And obviously, he's played tons of Aphelios and Ezreal. You know, him on Kalista, I was like, all right, so they have the option of trying to play through bottom Kalista and then the Lucian one. It's yes. Like, all right, Bang is for sure ready to play, you know, beat him up bottom side from early and try and focus that area. The biggest things to me were Sven Skarren stepped up in a huge way. He was really strong. And Golden Glue, right? The Swole Bros were some of the biggest differences in that series versus 100 Thieves. Mm-hmm. And of course, people are always going to bring up, but Golden Glue's opponent was Ryoma. So as we progress further, you're obviously going to have, you know, more difficult mid laners that you're
he's
playing
got Jensen
against
now, right?
And yeah, and if you're just going to slam down Jensen right in front of it, that's just like
I mean, they play the loser of actually C9 Fly, right? Because Golden Guardians is going to TSM.
Oh, excuse me. I was thinking of Golden Guardians.
Yeah, I mean, either way, he played against PoE and held up pretty well. Like, I don't think Golden Glue was
a
problem.
Yeah, but he didn't hold up well against 100 Thieves. He salamied Ryoma.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. If you can go against PoE and be okay, like, you're going to do well against some of the weaker. Because PoE is pretty, he's not lane dominant necessarily, but he is a pretty great player. So, totally fine with Golden Glue. I want to see, I know you said that he has these, Bang has a Kalista and Lucian. I do want to see him pick up the Caitlyn. They haven't played it. He's only played a little bit of Ashe. But I want to see them index a little bit more towards the early game. Zazel mostly is on tanks and utility. He's not really known for his enchanters, but like, if you're going to get into one of these like weird Kate Ashe Morgana-esque situations, I hope they go for the counter picks to enable Bang in the early game, because I think he's their best player right now. And putting him on things that aren't super relevant or like can't start influencing the game right away, I think is a little too passive for your best player. The same way people don't want Bjergsen on set and stuff. That's how I'm thinking about Bang. The Senna pick is good. I'm glad he does it, but I don't want that to become his default, which it feels like is happening a little bit.
Yeah, I think you know the last series was you know good because there was no Senna, right? Like it was Lucian, Ashe, Xayah. And you know he had been basically, you know, an Aphelios Ezreal guy throughout the whole season. Then he added the Senna, and then that kind of became problematic because it got taken away some, you know, against FlyQuest. So I'm happy that he has expanded that pool a little bit. I think that Senna is good, but I just think that teams drafting Senna, and this is happening with Jhin elsewhere in the world too, are losing track of what they need to make up for the deficiencies of those champions in team fight time, right? Because there's often so many tanks in the game right now, and people are drafting Senna and Jhin worldwide sometimes without any way to kill these tanks. And it's like, great, you have a solid laning phase here with this champion, and then there's an Ornn who no one can kill, right? So you need to be able to kind of cover that deficiency with, like, you know, maybe it's like a Corki or a Cassio or something, or have a Graves alongside it. Like, there has to be a well-rounded composition. You can't just kind of slap this in place of the Aphelios or in place of the Caitlyn. It just doesn't function in the same way. And that's something that I think teams need to be able to adjust to.
Or, and hear me out here, you have to be a confident team, but you don't draft another way to kill a strong tank later. You draft a laner into that tank that is going to just dumpster on this tank and make sure it is a weak tank. Those types of comps...
But dumpsters aren't, though. Like
always,
nothing.
Always make me, like, my heart beat. But
is it not beating normally?
Like
Kobe's a vampire.
You guys are both just tearing me down as soon as I try and start my
Kobe's heart. And so my when he has a late encounter,
my speech here.
His knees get weak when he sees the counter pick into Orin.
I am trying to say that I want to see more LPL style where we've got a Conqueror Renekton top dunking on this Orin. The Orin gets killed at level 2. The Orin gets killed at level 4. It's getting dove under the tower. The tower is gone. All the turret plates are there. The Renekton's got 2 items at 10 minutes into the game. And you just win this game. Let's go. 25 minutes, it's over. You stomp these fools. I want to see, you know, teams.
LPL style, the shy. Taking risks. 3
playing
games in
super
a row
aggressive.
With the comic, getting knocked out of playoffs. Lucian, Ken, and Kale.
Because honestly, we're setting up towards Worlds, and I've had enough of teams playing safe styles and outscaling and again, you know, I don't know if I can get my hopes up around that stuff anymore. 2018 changed me. Yeah. Ever since we had that breakthrough, and Cloud9 were like, forget this, we're going hard in the paint. And we had this full upsets and the collapse of the Korean slower style meta and all that stuff. I'm like, don't go slinking back to that now. We had the revolution.
That's true. I agree. I hope teams will be proactive. I hope teams will be aggressive. I do think that you're going to have to play like that, you know, going towards Worlds. But Worlds is pretty far off. And we do have FlyQuest versus C9 coming up. That's going to be our first playoff match. You know, we talked about the teams in lower bracket. This one is going to be, I think, really exciting.
Can I just call a break here real quick? Because we jumped so quickly into reviewing last week and teams and stuff. We skipped our whole intro section.
Yeah, I didn't. I made a joke, and then you ran with it. I was like, okay, here we go.
We can go back. Yeah, I was just generally we're 35 minutes in here.
Yeah, I mean, generally we start out with the top hot topics,
like news
general
of the week,
stories,
whatever.
this stuff.
Let's news it up.
We got right into analysis, drawn in by the excitement
TSM.
Of
we gotta,
last
we gotta
week's game.
Clickbait TSM.
Yeah. well done, Mark. North America, though, we are about to lock in our world seeds. And since we just kind of lightly touched on that topic, are you kind of excited? I love that we are getting top 3 teams from summer playoffs. So clearly, those are the best performing summer teams, top 3. Boom. No excuses about it.
I mean, like I said earlier, I actually really like that world seeds are on the line here too. There's no fallback plan. You must do well in playoffs. I actually prefer this to the gauntlet. I think it's made the matches really exciting. So I do think it's cool. You know, whoever wins these upper bracket matchups is going to be in worlds. They're going to be top 3. So I think that is really exciting. You know, we also had, do you have any more thoughts on that, Mark? It seems.
No, not really. I mean, I think it's cool. I'm excited to see who our first team from Worlds is, but we'll get into that when we get into the actual matches.
We also had the coaching staff of the split revealed. So Team Liquid's coaching staff did win out there. You know, that's pretty hype for them. Pretty hype for our boy Jet, who you know, in his first split as a coach gets that. I think that is really cool. You know, a lot of people, you know, I tweeted this out because I know I've talked about it like every time we do the awards, but I was getting so many tweets like, why didn't you vote for coaching staff of the split? Like, what's up with that? How come you didn't do it? And for me, this has always been a tough award because I just don't feel like I have enough insight into what's going on in the teams to really like give a vote I feel strongly about, right? I could vote based off of like, I can make up some criteria and say, okay, I'm going to vote based off of the best drafts, right? And then I could vote for that. But the problem is with most of the teams, you don't really know who is leading what. And when I talk to players and I talk to coaches, it is wildly different stories about who's doing what. Sometimes you'll talk to a player and be like, this coach sucks ass. He doesn't do anything. he's just ruining our team, you know. And you'll like listen to comms or hear about comms.
I love like, those conversations, by the way. And that's what I base a lot of mine off of. So I get like, you know, Kobe talked to X3 players, and those are the 3 that hate this coach. So, whoop, I guess he voted against him. You know, that type of stuff does happen. But I love those little, like, insider.
That's one of the things that I'm going to miss about
the... Sounds like they disagree, though.
Well, yeah. I was going to say, I'm going to miss the playoff after parties that happen, you know, like Riot usually throws like a little like end of the you know, thing ended. Let's all
everybody starts back. Drinking a little. They
Everyone
get a little
starts smack talking their team. Like, I don't know why we drafted that in game five. It sucked. You know, like, and it's so cathartic to get everyone's like vent sesh out. And yeah, I just like hovering around, you know, listening to all these stories. So
yeah, safe space. Not gonna repeat any of those. Yeah,
not gonna reveal anything. But it's just interesting, right? Like, I like that we have the award. I think it is good to acknowledge all the hard work and how much of an impact a good coaching staff has on it. Maybe there's some way we can improve it more, like more well define the award. Like, is it doing the most with the least? Is it having the best drafts? Like, I think that the award could benefit from like a more specific definition. But maybe I'm just dreaming. I don't know.
I definitely take the other side a little bit because I think a lot of the awards are not super well defined. You know, like the argument that you get with all these, like MVP, like Rookie of the Split, is it the person who, you know, they had the best team around them, so they look the best? Or is it, you know, what your own personal criteria? And I think that's how coaching staff is for me as well. We have the least information, to your point. You know, we don't get much insight beyond like docs and talking to players if they're willing to share. But I don't think every award has to be this like perfect. I know exactly like the order. I think it can be subjective. Totally. And a lot of the times I think the coach of the split award is a more narrative award, and that's fine. Like, it doesn't have to be this like, I sat in on every coaching session. I know who has the biggest brain. It's an acknowledgement to the fact that TL went from ninth to first. You know, that's what I see this award as. And Jat being a first-time coach in that situation and these kinds of things. Maybe if you got two coaches in a room and had them in the exact same situation, you could determine which one
coach
was the
off.
Coach. Yeah, you have some weird coach off. But I don't think that's really what I'm going for when I vote for this, because I vote for it. I'm usually going for some combination of improvement, which is the biggest thing I'd look up for a staff to do, is to make sure that their team is actually getting better. So I'm looking for improvement. I'm looking for, you know, decent drafts, like you're saying a little bit. I want to see the team seems to be getting along and doing well and whatnot. TL improved a lot over the course of the split. They cut 5 minutes off their average win time in the between first half, second half, and stuff. Like,
I've got an
I don't
idea.
Feel bad putting Jat number one for me.
I've got an idea for content now.
Oh God, coach off.
We bring two coaches into a scenario. All right, we've got this player. He just punch the other player's girlfriend in the butt. What do you do?
Excuse me.
That's not the setting I thought it was going
to
be.
I don't know. I just start saying like words. I just start saying words for a scenario, and that's a scary scenario.
Punched. I'm like, huh? His girlfriend? What? In the butt? Huh?
I definitely agree that I like the idea of it not being game related, though. Who's gonna like manage the little the kids the most when they're throwing their tantrums? Yeah.
All right, we'll workshop this. There was also, you know, some more stuff that came out this past weekend. You know, around 100 Thieves and the criticism they were getting, and you know, and Poom getting flamed. Mark was in the crosshairs a little bit for this. You know, big bully that Mark is. But you know, and I just want to touch on it a little bit. You know, It's less specific to this situation, but more just kind of like as a general topic. I do think this is a cycle that we sometimes go through in gaming and esports and sports in general, where, you know, someone has a bad performance, they get piled on, people get a little bit too extreme with the criticism, saying like, oh, retire this guy, you know, he's trash, whatever. Maybe it's personal attacks. It gets too extreme. And then there are people condemning those attacks. And then people then take that as license to go and attack the people like that, maybe criticized. You know what I mean? It's kind of this weird circle. And with the Poom situation specifically, like I never will condone personal attacks. I never will condone the super extreme stuff. But I will say that when you are a pro player in any sport, you are opening yourself up to like criticism. You're opening yourself up to jokes and memes and this sort of stuff. That is a part of every sport, right? You know, joking about players having bad games, like good games, memeing, having fun. That is fandom. That is sports. And as far as like the jokes about Poom and the criticism he was getting, to be clear, you know, Poom did literally set some negative records in this series. He had the most deaths ever in a playoff game with 10. He in LCS, right? I don't know if this is worldwide. He also had the highest deaths per minute with his 8 death game, I do believe, in that like 24 minute game, right? So it's not as though, you know, real analysis and criticism wouldn't have even come off as harsh, right? You know, like people almost like joking about it and memeing about it. I think in some ways was kind of like a lighter way to point to it, because you could do the hard hitting analysis of like, this is the worst series ever. And like deaths don't really equate to like performance 1-to-1 or anything. But this is something that Poom struggled with in the regular season too, where when 100 Thieves was playing from behind, he often died a lot more. Than other supports. You know, he struggled on knowing where to go, where to be. But this is a really, like, a guy who has not a lot of competitive experience. He had a meteoric rise to LCS. It's super impressive that he was able to get through Academy and 100 Thieves Next. I think he was even with them for a little bit of time, straight into LCS. And we are super excited about his improvement. But I do think that I was a bit surprised by some of the reactions. Like, I think my take on it was like, knowing you, Mark, I saw this, I was like, oh, that's a stupid joke. Like, or maybe that wasn't that funny, right? But like, I didn't take this as you trying to like rip on him and be like, screw this guy. I just took this as like, you know, a dumb joke.
It's literally a poop joke, you know, like he has poo in his name. Yeah. And
it was
like
a shitty joke, Mark. Pretty crappy.
Snaps in point. You know, like I was going for the same energy as, and I said this on Hotline League, and there's a longer conversation about it on Hotline League that I don't want to go over all of it, but it was the same energy as craps, claps, caps, and dumbs and crumbs. And there's like a long history in the league scene of using someone's name. Yeah, like all those kinds of things.
Geo and two.
Yeah, like there's tons of that kind of stuff. And that was the energy I was going for, was to put a smile on someone's face. Now, I do know that it was used to, that some people did like quote retweet with some actual like flame at him. And so that's why I can acknowledge that, like, hey, it did have and probably generated some hate towards him and was used as fodder in some sense. And I don't think you can, like, just because my intentions weren't bad, you can't just separate that from outcome. And so that's why I have no problem apologizing about it. Like, hey, I wasn't trying to start hate on his timeline. And like, that's not my intent. And like you're saying, people were going too far, it sounds like. And like, if I contributed to that, of course, I'm sorry. But at the same time, that was not what I was going for. Like you're saying, it was a dumb poop joke that hopefully, like, I look forward to, like, you know, in a year from now, the same way people meme all of us, like, there's going to be like, hopefully, like, he comes back, he's popping off, you know, like I hope that in a year, you know, people are able to use this as a funny joke, you know, not as actual hate, because that's all it was supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for me, the reason I like didn't go hard on him, and the reason I opened up the casting the series with, this is Poom's first best of five at any level. And, you know, he'd never played one in Academy or, you know, any like competitive environment, and bringing up, you know, how new he is. Then when I, you know, saw everything that was going on, there's a big difference. Like, if we use the caps craps example, everybody knows he's an amazing player. He's a world-class player. He's one of the best mid laners in the entire world. So it's way easier to joke about him being shit, because they're also like, wow, he's also a super good player. It can be most difficult when you are getting slammed already from like a whole bunch of different directions, and you don't have that confidence and that history to rely on. And that's where I'm like, oh man, that feels like big, like piling on to someone that's already getting, you know, beat down. I mean, there's and a big kicked difference around a lot,
punching up, punching down, which I totally acknowledge as well. And I think one of the things too that probably overvalued was, like, well, every time I've talked about Poom seriously in every analysis I've done, I've caveated it with like, hey, he dies too much, which I said after the Nautilus game, after the Core JJ game when he was against Bard. I always said, this is something that's hard for new players to learn. He's really young. I expect him to improve. I hope he does. And like, acknowledge that these are, you know, it's a different situation. People don't care. They, you know, they see the one tweet and it's like, there you go. That's my entire thoughts on him. It's like, oh, okay.
Yep. And at the end of the day, my synopsis is just, I think it's okay to meme, to joke, to like have fun, to make fun of casters and players of whatever. You know, you just have to draw the line at like personal attacks and going too extreme, right? You know, going too far with the criticism and stuff.
Yeah.
And if a lot of people are already making fun of someone, I also don't just jump on, because everyone's always like, oh, let me get on that like trade.
To be fair, I was the first one who tweeted anything. I tweeted the game was ending. I was like, how could I know it was going to turn into a Poom hate thing beforehand?
Yeah, I'm not targeting. I'm not targeting. Yeah, I know. You with this.
I'm more replying to people who were saying like, you're piling on to me, and I was like,
well, and to be fair, I tweeted out a scoreline. I didn't say the Poo gang thing, which I think is like, got you in hot water.
Yeah,
but I tweeted out a scoreline, but then I followed up with like, you know, but on the real, like this guy has had a meteoric rise. I'm really excited to see where he's going to go over the next couple of years. And I think that's true for you. That's true for me. That's true for really everyone in the scene. You know, we want more young talent coming up. Hopefully people can joke and criticize without getting too extreme. And hopefully that doesn't dissuade, you know, more young players.
We had universal praise for Dig and Immortals and 100 Thieves for making the more long-term roster moves of bringing in younger players. And I think all of us want to see those kinds of things.
All right. 50 minutes in, first match. Let's go.
Here we go. Perfect timing.
A quick 50 minute intro here into the LCS. First matchup of the weekend, FlyQuest and C9. Rematch of the spring finals. Been waiting to see C9. They had a rough last couple weeks. Then FlyQuest struggled a little bit, you know, in their series against EG. Who's going to be?
For me, the first thing I thought of when we are in our story meeting and starting to write out, you know, some of the ideas for intros and content around this and stuff, I'm just like, we literally have had on camera interviews with Cloud9 members talking about how they love playing FlyQuest because they're so predictable. They know how they're going to draft and how they're going to play, and their style is exactly what Cloud9 as a team like to attack. Cloud9 as a team with Blabber love trying to, you know, pressure in the early stages and snowball around moving your mid lane. Power of Evil is a very good resource heavy mid laner.
He's a turret.
And a lot of and honestly, he has gone a decent way of like kind of moving the perception of like especially the turret perception and playing some more assassins and roam style champions. But as every player that I talked to that has played with and against him, that's always agreed upon, right? He's a resource heavy player, and if you're on his team, that you're going to have to play around, you know, that sort of style. And Cloud9, they have successfully in the past been able to attack it. But do we think it's getting to the point now with FlyQuest Rise? And they are on now six all update, but big win streak for FlyQuest.
6-0, and so they're 7-0 against them,
gaining like that. They're gaining a lot of momentum. And playing a lot better with multiple threats, because Turtle is playing extremely well. I think better than he has played in a long time. And Solo obviously has been pulling his weight for the majority of the split. And ever since that Renekton game, everybody has really finally recognized him as a true secondary carry threat.
I thought you were actually saying a C9's winning streak against FlyQuest. You were talking about FlyQuest's regular season.
No, I was trying to reference FlyQuest's regular season.
Okay, yeah. The regular season was really hot.
Regular season win streak that they had.
Yeah, but then they obviously went 3-2 against EG, so they're not on the win streak anymore. But right, in the regular season, it was like 6
they had
in
been
a row
building
something.
Up all this momentum towards the end of the split.
Yeah,
and that's kind of what I'm talking about, like an end of the split up to
the only problem, Kobe,
just
is
fell off against EG.
They haven't won a game versus C9 all year.
Yeah,
0-2 in the regular season versus them. I do think
that's why I set it up with the Cloud9 being so heavily advantaged. And now your guys are like, well, the problem here, Kobe, with
you're saying the win streak, but I mean, they went 3-2 against CG, right? So they obviously don't know.
I mean, so
I hear you.
Yeah. And I think they did do, even in that series, even though it was 3-2, they did address some of the things that I think you could have used as ammo against them in the series. Is they picked Cog mid, they had Swain mid, they were doing some interesting things. There's one other pick that they did was interesting. I can't remember what it is now. Might have been the bot lane. Oh, Gragas support was another one that they busted out and looked really good on.
Off that game, holy.
Yeah, he was insane. And so I think they have done some of the things in draft to make it probably a little less paint by numbers when playing against them that C9 was saying in the regular season. And C9's mid game has been really bad in the recent weeks. You know, as much as they went 2-0 on their last week, it was against, I forget if it was like Dig or CLG or something. It was not, you know, it was not the teams that they're really expected to compete with in the playoffs for finals and for worlds. So I'm still very sketched on C9. I want to believe that like this is some best of one struggles, and with the time off, they'll be able to focus and get comps that work for them again, like they seem to have at the start of the split. But it's just been so long since we've seen them actually be good that I actually have a hard time believing that this will be an easy series at all for them.
that's why it's I think really exciting, right? Because people are like, well, is this the C9 that was struggling? Are we going to get the C9 that was really on form from all spring and you know the first half of summer? Are they just going to be dominant? I have heard they're trashing everyone in scrims. Sometimes people exaggerate that stuff super hard and you hear different things from different sources. I also know that Solo, you know, referencing him in that interview right after, you know, he was saying that he thinks C9 is the best team. He wishes TL picked them because TL, yeah, you know, would be easy peasy. And, you know, C9 is the best team in the league. So clearly, like, that to me was like, ooh, you're not very confident going
to
into this.
To be fair, though, I heard that they were doing well in scrims during their slump in the regular season as well.
Yep. Doesn't always equate to stage results. No.
Yeah. I've been on teams where we had like 65%+ win rate and we did not do well in playoffs in Gauntlet.
Yeah. Yeah. but C9 has always been, I think, like, I'll say this. They've always been flexible throughout the regular season, you know, whether or not people were happy with the different things that they were showing. I do think that having all these different threats, if you can bring it together, is going to be a big advantage at best of five, right? Because it becomes very difficult to actually know exactly what you're going to go for and what you're going to draft. And I've always thought that was an advantage for them. And specifically because they have had such a good matchup against FlyQuest over this entire year, you know, they 3-0'd them in spring finals. I don't think they lost them in spring regular season. They didn't lose them in summer regular season. It's that alone would be, you know, like 7-0, I guess, right? And they have kind of had their number. So I do still feel like they're probably going to be coming into this pretty comfortably.
Yeah, I do think, though, like moving into the EG series that FlyQuest had, them showing the Swain that early and everyone going, oh, yeah, that is a good, you know, Galio counter to these teams that want to initiate on you, mm-hmm, and these big AoE fights. That is a tool that they have already shown that is a really good tool versus Cloud9, because... Yeah. Cloud9 and Niski have looked so much better when he is on champions like that. Obviously, he also has the Zoe, which they've been able to use super well for, you know, picking people off and, you know, mid-game poke and stuff like that. But that was also a big part of Cloud9's playstyle. And they even said themselves, like, some of the matches where they're like, all right, we brought out the big guns, the Galio and Kalista now. And those are the types of things that, you know, FlyQuest are more ready now, but Cloud9 have also seen some of the things already shown on the table with them having to play versus EG.
I also think individual matchups aren't bad for FlyQuest in a lot of ways. Like I put Santorin over Blabber even in the all pro voting. So I think he can help control Blabber, because Blabber was still having good early games, even the slumps. So like I think he can control those early games. Top lane's tough. Solo doesn't usually get like a ton of help. He's kind of on like, you get what you get, and then you play your lane phase. Sorry. And Licorice does get some help. So I think if they can stabilize their top side of the map, bot lane for C9 doesn't do a ton in the early game. And it kind of might allow Ignar to roam a lot. So, like, I think there are some openings for FlyQuest to actually win this series through jungle, like, almost like more of a control game plan, and then letting Ignar have those kind of Gragas games where he's all over the map.
I really think Santorin is in a position to cement his place as this, you know, juggernaut jungler of the North American LCS. I've been spectating a lot of Challenger players solo queue. Santorin it just ones at the very top. And Santorin has been spamming and crushing a lot of these solo queue games where both teams are filled with several LCS players and several Academy players. Yes, there's sometimes a couple of randoms in there, you know, that aren't placed on a team, but they're all very high up on the ladder. And every single game that I've watched has been so impressed by Santorin's individual play, playing a lot of aggressive stuff too, playing so many carries. So with the last game of that EG series, him finally pulling out the Graves, you know, yeah, it's like volley bear, volley bear, volley bear, volley bear, Graves, boom, carry, you know, carry game for Santorin. And seeing some of these solo queue games where he's playing a lot of carries, I'm like, maybe this is the series where we see, you know, FlyQuest actually going carry jungle to carry jungle. And that makes me super excited.
I think for me, this series is going to be so much about mid lane and mid jungle. I just think that it's like, you know, to your point, Mark, you know, C9 does give more help to top lane, but I feel like it's usually, you know, Niski and Blav rolling up and making these three-man plays. So I think that, you know, a pick like this Swain, if you can get that type of pick that is really like hard winning on the lane, and have a winning 2v2 in jungle, like if you can lock Niski under the turret, I that is a way that I can see FlyQuest winning this series, right? Because your point, Cloud9's mid-game team fighting hasn't been good lately, right? And maybe they clean this up, and maybe this is a Cloud9 that won a championship in spring, and it's not close. Who knows? But if we're seeing this Cloud9 that we have seen over the last couple of weeks that looks mortal, I do think that locking Niski in lane has been the key to a lot of teams beating them. If you can keep this guy under control, if you can keep this guy, you know, locked down, I don't think PoE has to roam to match him. I think that, you know, if you get PoE a winning matchup where he's stable and can push in, then that can take away a lot of Niski's agency and perhaps, you know, be a key to victory for FlyQuest. Because I do think that FlyQuest has some strong laners, and especially if Turtle and Ignar are playing like they have been and solo can hold up, I think there's a lot of ways that theoretically FlyQuest, you know, could stabilize in the early game and maybe win fights around Dragon or win fights around the mid game and get something done there. But I do think it's going to be an uphill battle for them because, you know, stylistically it does feel like Cloud9, you know, pushes them more than they are ready to react. And that's kind of been the case throughout this entire year, where Cloud9, you know, is just constantly forcing plays and FlyQuest isn't always up to the task of playing at that speed. You know, they like to play a more controlled, slower game. So I think this is going to be a really interesting one. And it's also, I think, going to dictate a lot of how people feel like going forward, right? If Cloud9 wins this but really struggles, I think people are going to be probably, well, it's going to depend on the TL series, but I think people are probably going to have TL as like favorite to win the split, you know? And if C9 can really impress, then I think that's going to change a lot of people's opinions perhaps on the strength of the org going forward, and people could be quick to forget some of those struggles in the last couple weeks.
And historically, it's funny that you mention it, like the difference in speed and the forcing of plays from Cloud9's side, the difference hasn't been Santorin and Blabber. The difference has been in the past, the Niski mid lane being the difference in the pressure and PoE trying to pressure him and push him in lane, and Niski just leaving anyway and making that side lane play. So
plus in the regular season, remember the first time they played with Turtle, I can't remember the second game, but the first time they played FlyQuest, they had that bad invade where Blabber got three of them killed, like 3-for-1 or something. And then it was their insane mid game that actually let them get back into the game, and they're better skirmishing. So I'm wondering, you know, if they lose that advantage and their skirmishing isn't up to, you know, isn't quite there, and they make some of these mistakes. No, I think it's actually pretty close. Are we doing predictions on this? Or
sure.
All right, someone else go first.
So I could be way off on this. I'm saying 3-0 Cloud9.
I do
believe that with the strength that FlyQuest showed, I think FlyQuest looked a lot weaker than I was expecting. You know, with them against EG, I thought they were going to trash EG. I thought they were going to look, you know, really bulletproof.
But that's because you thought EG were like your EG. You had them so low.
I know, but
you had the worst team.
I think that FlyQuest looked way worse than they did in the regular season.
Then EG looked better as well.
So yeah. I think it was a combination. It wasn't just EG playing up. I think it was FlyQuest playing worse. That in combination with the fact that they have not beaten C9 a single time in this entire year. Solo seemed extremely concerned about the matchup, and stylistically, I think that it is concerning. Plus, C9 has had so much time to prep specifically for this team that has been predictable in draft. I think that smells like a sweep. I hope I'm wrong and that it is competitive, but that's what I'm feeling.
I am also going Cloud9, but I really think the 3-0 is super overreaching.
Yeah.
I do think it's going to be way closer. And you keep referencing like the normal season Cloud9 beating them. In the first game, it was Orianna first game was the Corki into LeBlanc, and then the second game was the Orianna into Galio. Mm-hmm. So like both of them, they're at the roaming disadvantage, and PoE is playing the one that's, you know, more confined to lane, has to scale up. Like Corki in particular needs two items, and then the other one you're versus the Galio, and they have shown to evolve a little bit more to try and counter in that direction. So I think it's going to be closer. I'm still saying Cloud9 because I still think the stylistic difference is too much. My game score would be 3-2. Okay. And maybe that's also wishful thinking because we've had back-to-back 3-0s that were you know, less than ideal, less than we're looking for in the entertainment. But I really think this is going to be a super entertaining, close series, and I'm still going Cloud Nine.
I'm going Cloud Nine. I'm also going 3-2. The only thing that makes me think it's more towards Azale's point is about the scrims thing and the volatility of best of ones and,
yeah,
you know, a number of factors that could have made their regular season ending look worse on stage than it really was. That's my biggest concern of like why I would be wrong, but
I hope scrims lie. Just things I've been hearing and
I'm going to tell you, Zale, you're wrong. It's not going to be a 3-0.
All right. Well, we'll find out.
We might not be right,
here.
But neither will Zale.
Yeah.
It's going to be a 3-1 and we're both wrong. Yeah. All right. Golden Guardians versus TL. We're going to jump into this one here. Golden Guardians. You know, I talk about maybe FlyQuest stock went down after their first round performance. Golden Guardians stock definitely went up, right? You know, TSM, I think, had
yeah, that's some Tesla stock right there.
Golden to the moon, baby. TSM played down, but Golden Guardians also, I think, you know, did improve. They looked more impressive. I think that they came in with a really intelligent plan. My big question for this series is, like, can you solve TL in the way that they solved TSM? Mm-hmm. I think that they are a more solid team than TSM, and I think that is going to be the big difficulty here for Golden Guardians, because TL plays slow, they play standard, and they have five really, really good players. And that just doesn't feel solvable to me. Like, I don't see how you get this, like, big pick-ban advantage against a team that's always playing the same way and always playing, you know, they just don't make a lot of mistakes. They're just really good at it.
I'm with you. I love Golden Guardians. And if I'm being honest, I went back and like rethought about how I talked about them in on the Dive and Hotline League last week. And I realized I probably said more good things about them than TSM. I love a lot of their players. I had them like actually higher rated in 4 out of 5 positions, you know, and Devontae has been to Worlds.
So much.
No. That's what I'm saying. It's like, for some reason, I still can't ever pick them, because I feel still really, really strongly about, like, I think Haunster has a more diverse champion pool that could maybe be used to get advantages on, you know, we're talking about solving, you know, like you can kind of know what Impact's probably going to play and prepare a couple counters in the top lane. I think Haunster is someone who is really good in lane and can potentially get an advantage there. Bot difference is not going to go the same way. You know, it won't be like Core JJ doesn't have an answer to Morgana, but I still think that their bot lane could actually win the matchup over a 5-game series and just in general have more good performances. I think Core JJ will obviously, he's the front runner, I think, for a lot of people's MVP. He'll probably still pop off in the series. And jungle is, I think, the biggest mismatch in the entire series, which is also in favor of Golden Guardians. So once again, I can like hype them up in my mind a ton about why I think that they should actually potentially do well into TL. And so then why, I'm still going to predict TL.
Why do you think they lose so much then? Do you just think that they're a good individuals but a bad team? Like, why? Like, so if you're so excited about this team, why were they 9-9?
I don't think that they have good mid-game shot calling and decision making, which was compounded in the regular season with their over-indexing into early game drafts. I think that they drafted like those kind of niddly Jace kind of esque comps a bunch of times, or Jace for Haunster and these kinds of things. I don't think they need to do that. I think your players are naturally good enough to kind of get early game advantages without indexing into it. And then I don't think that they have a great shot caller. Like, it's probably not Closer. It's probably not Demonte. It's probably not FBI. Haunster seems okay. He's probably okay, but I don't think that they're this great mid-game shot calling team, which is one of the problems against TL, who is probably the least error prone team in the league right now, which is why I'm still going with TL. But I think that Golden Guardians often in the regular season misread the meta and then shot themselves in the foot a number of times. That's my big spiel.
I want to jump on hyping up Golden Guardians as well. Yeah. Even though my prediction is going to be in favor of Team Liquid, because
hyping them up and then being like 3-0-3.
Because they did start out 1-4, and so it has been a constant split of improvement for the Golden Guardians.
Except for the last weekend, right? Where they kind of reverted.
To Mark's point, they played 2 Renekton and Nidalee games, both super early game, trying to snowball off of that, lost both of those games. Those were the two main losses at the end of the split. That was your drop off. And to Mark's point, it does seem like they learned from that, because in their series then versus TSM, they never once tried to over-index on that again. They threw that out the window, and they went with Hanser on one of the most self-sufficient top laners that there is, Mordekaiser two games, and then Gangplank, the other one, and with Demonte on Ziggs, Orianna. So they kind of threw a lot of that loss strategy out the window, and I think they adapted really well. This being on new patches as well, being able to incorporate shifts in your overall team play, I think is really promising heading through best of five series. Plus, they're all going to be in a very good mindset. We've been discussing the mental game for a lot of these series, you know, how difficult it's going to be from TSM, having to, you know, come back and play with confidence versus a lot of these teams. Golden Guardians are going to be the ones with the puffed up chest right now. They're like, you give me credit. You've been not giving me enough credit before. I'll show you now, right? And after 3-0 of Team Liquid, they can stomp on the ground and be like, we're proving it now. So I can definitely see them just playing with the utmost confidence and now also showing flexibility in strategy. Does make me super confident, as well as, of course, Huhi, FBI playing super well. Hanser, I think, to me, with so much focus being on the bottom lane,
he was great.
It's been rightfully so. I think Hanser was a monster versus his old team. Versus TSM, he was clapping people all over the place and without a lot of help, as usual. You know, he, throughout the season, tracking his jungle proximity, he has either been last or like second to last for almost every week. Playing a lot of weak side. Mark's here. Oh, hello. Golden Guardians. Yeah. This is me. Yeah. I'm going to need an extra $1,000 here to talk you up for another segment. You only
the,
bought
the offer wasn't, well, it wasn't high enough. I'm still going TL. I tried.
He's calling and buying some Golden Guardians.
Hello, Mark.
Stock
check
right
your
now.
Bank account. This is Steve. I'd like you to retract your statement on the
All
Golden
right, you,
Guardians.
You've got the odds higher for Golden Guardians now, so bet TL. I'm rigging it. I don't know where we were when I took that. To talk about TL, though, like, they are so good in every single lane. And Tactical is a beast. I don't think the ball is going to run into the same problems like we were saying. And Core JJ will have a much bigger, like, probably the biggest difference in the series will be Core JJ. People need to remember that he was literally.
Did Core JJ put Huhi as his vote for top support?
He did.
That's some respect that right there.
Being like, he's better. I don't think
yeah,
so.
Maybe. I don't think so. I think at the end of the day, I'm excited about Golden Guardians' improvement. I do agree that they're. Their pick band, I think, was a lot more solid against TSM. I just, you know, I can't get past that. I think that they even talked about in the interviews how for TSM, if Bjergsen doesn't carry, they don't win, right? Clear pick band strategy, all bans thrown towards him. One of the games, he got 5 bans against him. It worked, you know, double lift and treats didn't step up in the bot lane. They didn't have carry threats elsewhere to actually, you know, take over the game. But this sort of strategy just doesn't work against TL. You just have to outplay TL, and that is where I think TL being so solid is going to be such a tremendous advantage for them, because TL just doesn't make mistakes, and this is going to challenge Golden Guardians not only in the laning phase, it's going to challenge their mid-game shot calling, their ability to close games, because TL will almost always draft for a really strong team fighting team. They make very few mistakes. They have strong laners across the board. And that is why I think it's about so much more in this series than just the individual talent of Golden Guardians. I think that, you know, TL kind of trumps them in their ability to make calm decisions and to play make, you know, in the mid game and the late game. It does feel like that is where there's a huge advantage to TL's side. And I think that you really need to have something special to be able to best TL in a series. Because I think that, you know, any of their lanes really can win them the game. And I just don't see, like, who are you supposed to ban out? You know, it just doesn't feel like there's anything obvious to do against TL except ban the strongest meta champions, because they're going to draft meta and they're going to play, you know, slow scaling style. So you ban out Caitlyn, you ban out whatever you think is most OP, but like there's no player to target.
Yeah. I mean, Golden Guardians ran into some mid game problems still, even with this, you know, later game scaling focus. They still, I think it was game two or game, I can't remember, game one or game two, they lost like a 4K gold lead and kind of went to even. TSM is not even a great mid game team. So when you go up against a great mid game team and you stall out like that, it's going to feel a lot worse, I think, which is why I'm still TL. I'll go 3-1. I think Golden Guardians will steal a game here, but that's the most I can do for them.
That's the most. Wait, Mark, I think you're getting another call.
Best I can do is one game.
3-2. 3-2. What did I say? I'm going 3-1.
I'm the same.
Hello. I think I'm going to be... I'm bumping it up to a 3-2. For me, I'm actually going to go 3-2 for Golden Guardians.
Okay. Golden Guardians going to win?
Or excuse me. It's still 4-team liquid, but I'm bumping up the Golden Guardians.
How much is in your paper?
Wait, what? Yeah, still team liquid. Because you're like, oh yeah, they have all these strong laners, you know, and they're going to be just fine on their own. But the jungle, do you think that Closer is going to be able to create more than Brox is going to be able to create, either in invading, which you would assume would have to come from drafting a winning lane side of the map and using that side. So you have to be cognizant of that, or trying to snowball and get a specific lane ahead.
I think he'll create more, but I don't think they'll hold on to the lead. Like, you know, and I don't expect them to just win 2v2 bot lane. I don't expect them to, you know, just like automatically win any of these lanes, right? So I think that if Closer has a slight advantage, I don't think it matters. Golden Guardians has been pretty poor at playing from ahead for the most part.
And Brox's like bad games are not like other people's bad games. Yeah, right. Like his bad game is like, oh, he just didn't seem to have an influence on it. Not like he had a negative influence. Whereas,
except for the one Closer game, actually, got Flame Horizon to buy Closer on Nidalee, but then they still Golden Guardians got Soul and then lost that game.
And that was like the second game of the split for TL. So it was a lot of things are different now. And I think unless there's some unique ban strategy that gets rid of some stuff that, you know, is in Brox's pool but not in Closer's and creates an even bigger mismatch, I just don't think Brox is going to be getting killed in the jungle and fall out of relevancy, which is, I feel like, what Closer would need to do to him to be able to upset how I think this series will go.
Yeah, I think the top lane's actually pretty interesting too. Is like both Hanser and Impact have shown this prevalence for Mordekaiser now. I mean, with Hanser now jumping on the train too, that's one of his big picks. Everybody's hyper vigilant of the Shen, and that might even be something that's drawing bans. To your point of like, oh, targeting people like that, to me is like a specific one champion that you would want to target versus Impact versus
you're saying because
it's not like you're putting him like though. Oh, he can't play any other stuff. But I feel like it's very necessary to
strong meta champion that he plays really well.
I feel like if you want to play more though, you just let Shen go through. Because that's a great answer.
Yeah, it's just scary that they haven't been able to like successfully pull that off. Because I would agree, like matchup great, you know, and that should be on paper playable. But Impact undefeated on Shen. Still,
you can lose lane like win game on Shen, obviously.
Yeah,
but you know he's been so good with the Mord, like denying smites and stuff from the jungler. So it's interesting. Mord, I could definitely see rising in priority. It feels like Mord in general has been successful, very successful in playoffs, especially when you're playing for Dragon Soul and your jungler can just get ulted and then you have an uncontested smite. You know, that'll be pretty interesting. I'm excited for both these series. Go ahead, Mark.
Oh, it was really minor. I just like the proto belt tech as well for those kinds of plays. I thought that was really good by Haunter, which not a ton of people do.
The mini gap closer. It also helps with the push a lot, which can be nice pressure lane. But I'm going to go, I think, 3-1 as well. You know, I'm hoping that Golden Guardians comes up with something spicy. I think the Ziggs pick was right against TSM. If they can get really creative and find some answers that people weren't expecting, I think that would be a way in. You know, if they can find some way to really abuse bot lane 2v2, that would be a way in. But I think it's going to take something special for them because TL is so solid. I think that they have been the most solid team, you know, in the league. So I think they're a tough nut to crack.
Mark's passing notes with me here.
Passing notes while the teacher's talking.
My fingers were one off to the right on my keyboard.
What is Yimmer?
And it came out as gibberish. Welcome to the Honda MVP section, where we released the top 10. So the top 10 for the Honda MVP voting. Who do you think is most likely? I think we're all still going to say like Core JJ.
Yeah.
But I like including all of the top 10 because we get to give some credit around as far as the snubs with this year. You guys both talked explicitly about how many people are getting snubbed in every single role.
So let me read out the top 10. And this is at LCS official on Twitter. If you guys want to find that, it's pretty easy to find on the Twitter. But Bjergsen, Blaber, Closer, Corja J, Impact, Jensen, Licorice, Power of Evil, Santorin, and Someday are the top 10. Notably, 3 TL players, 2 FlyQuest, 2 C9. And then you have, you know, Closer, Someday, and Bjergsen all sneaking in there as solos from their squads.
So what do we want to predict here? Who we think is going to win, or who's going to get axed? Who do we think is going to get axed?
How about who's axed first? Because I think we all have the top pretty soon.
Well, where are they moving to next, right? Is going from 10 to what? Because I mean, I think
10 to 5.
If it's going 10 to 5, I mean, I think you can start by saying who you think the top 3 is going to be. For me, the top 3 would be, you know, Core JJ, probably Bjergsen, Blaber. If I had to say who I think is going to be after that for top 5, I would probably say maybe Jensen and Santorin added in there. Something like that would be my guess.
I think Someday gets a lot of votes too. Yeah.
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 But he didn't even win, first team all pro. So maybe he'll get less than Licorice, right?
Yeah, but he got second.
I think something that happens too is like the people who put him first team will guarantee to have put him for MVP. Whereas people who put Licorice first team might not have put him MVP. So it's one of those weird voting things, like can't happen like that. Which I know sometimes people freak out, like how this guy get more MVP votes, but also, be lower.
I don't think Licorice is actually going to get a lot of the MVP votes, because most people that would have him super high for top are going to have a different Cloud9 member as their MVP.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Impact, Licorice, Closer, you know, Power of Evil are all going to fall out for sure.
Yeah, I'm surprised Impact's even in there at all, to be honest.
Like closer to your point, Mark, like maybe the people that voted him high will still vote for him for MVP, but he was third team, right? So I don't think there's going to be enough of them to really have him in the, you know, in the top running for MVP.
I like that all these players are getting representation though. Including top 10, because they've all been such good players and really important to their individual teams.
What's interesting too is there's 4 top laners.
Well, and look at mid and jungle. All of all pro for mid and jungle are both in there, right? Yeah. Like we have Power of Evil, Bjergsen, Jensen. That's your top 3 for all pro. Blaber,
Licorice,
Closer,
Santorin. Licorice Impact Someday, also
top
3.
We have 3 top 3s and then a support. No marksman players in there and 1 support, right? So I guess bot lane, irrelevant. Doesn't matter. There you go.
It's funny that all of the other ones are 3 representatives and it's just Core JJ.
Yeah.
Because I think that also splitting the vote, if you're like deciding between one of these other lanes, Core JJ answer is so easy because he's so high up there for the supports. And that was represented in the support voting.
That's true.
Where he had the most ginormous lead, like the biggest gap between him and second place and third
place.
He
also had the most all pro votes in first team as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's a really good point, because if you're like, ooh, jungle's most impactful role, my MVP may be from there, there's going to be more cannibalizing between like people who are like Bjergsen, Jensen, or the people who are saying, no, Closer or Santorin or Blaber or whatever. If you're considering Core JJ kind of stands alone. I mean, I think he's for sure going to be the MVP. I don't think it's actually going to be close.
Yeah. I don't think so either, but we'll pretend it will be.
It'll be interesting, and we could be wrong. You know, I was surprised by some of the stuff in the All Pro, but that is pretty hype. We now have some Twitter questions we're going to hop into. This first one comes from Michael Gums, I believe. Do you think Ashe should be reworked into a damage support like Pyke and Senna? And what are your thoughts in general on damage supports without heavy nerfs? They usually get played in the support role. They usually never get played in the support role, excuse me.
I would rather a new champion be designed in that fashion than rework. I think Ashe's is really cool right now. I feel like she has a very unique identity. And if we are taking that and turning it into a damage support, I feel like we would lose one of the utility information gathering marksmen and putting it into a support role. So I understand where the question's coming from, because we've all had those people playing support Ashe and being like, oh yeah, my hawk shot and arrow and stuff like that, and you're kind of like, okay, I'm not gonna dodge, but I have this weird feeling and
I'm not gonna dodge, but I should have dodged.
But
maybe if Hawkshot Max was the thing, like maybe if there was like more of a benefit, then it, without removing it from like AD, you could also make it like, oh, you know, maybe there's some sort of thing there. that allows you to like want to play as a support sometimes. I don't know.
That's kind of why I want it designed as a new champion with focus on information gathering. Because information gathering, I think, is a cool and more unexplored area. And that would be the reason why you...
Give him Swain's W. Give him all the
that's
long
all
range.
It is, just these cobbled Frank,
just
together.
A Frankenstein?
Just shooting out things like 2,000 units away for vision.
Has no ability to deal
Calista
damage.
Calista W, the Sentinel starts just walking out.
Yeah, he just has Swain W, Calista W, and Hawkshot. And what's your ultimate all? Is, I don't know. Your ultimate is a really big sweeper.
Oh, it's Quinn's like W, but it just goes for half the map. His pulse.
Just the whole map.
I see you. Now what?
I found them. I'm going to die. I think I agree. Like, I don't want to push everything that's somewhat utility in the bot lane into becoming a support. I know that's not, that is a bit of a slippery slope argument, but I think Ashe is in a really cool spot right now as this kind of utility marksman that scales kind of well, has different build paths, and is probably one of, in my opinion, one of the best designed and balanced AD carries. And I wouldn't want to tank that for an experimental idea.
All right, next question here. This one comes from Rumble Stew. This is actually our executive producer for LCS. He says, listen to the dive wall during a 12.5 mountain bike or 12.5 mile mountain bike ride this morning. When I finished, they were still talking. These guys never shut the fuck up, and I wouldn't have it any other way. Well, you're in for a treat, Dave, because this one's probably just as long of an episode.
Yeah,
I'm glad you didn't say STFU. You just drop it.
Yeah,
I can blame him. He can't find me. He's got to find himself. He's the one who tweeted this to us.
That's what I was going to say. The best part of that question is that Azale is allowed to drop an F-bomb because it's our executive producer putting it in his script.
Really confined, Dave. All complaints directed to Rumble Stew. Yeah.
So I'll also say I'm more impressed in the amount of time it took him to do a 12 and a half mile mountain bike ride. More so than the dive. The dive is like, what, 90 minutes? He did that in an hour and a half then? I don't know much about biking. Is that impressive? I think that sounds impressive to me.
We're almost at 90 minutes right now, by the way. We're almost at 90 minutes right now for this one. So
I'm impressed, Dave. That's all I'll say.
Good job, Dave. Keep it up. All right. Anchor questions. We got them. This one is from last week because we promised we would have a little bit of those questions popped in since we didn't get to them last week. This one comes from David Slavic.
What pro series would you guys use to introduce a casual league friend into the world of pro esports? I know there's a lot of good ones like SKT versus ROX in the World Semifinals, but I don't really know which one to pick. Also, Azale, my last name is pronounced Slavic.
What did I say? Slavic?
Slavic?
I'm not sure what I said.
You said something Slavic. Slightly different. You're okay. Slightly off. I think you were off on maybe the A.
Slavic.
But, yeah. And I like that he preempted it. He was like, yeah, he's going to say it wrong.
But I already read his name by the time I heard it.
Also, we mix up who reads these sometimes. And you happen to read this one. So he got a little lucky on that, too.
He knows it's not me. So the interesting thing about this is historic games look weird now when I go back and rewatch them with all the graphics update and champion kit updates and all this stuff. So like, SKT ROX, I haven't rewatched it in like at least a year or two, other than like the highlights of like the Ashe era. Whoa.
I did a year ago because we had a feature on it.
It
still looked good to me, but obviously it's not going to have elemental rift changes and stuff like that. So
yeah,
my,
not so those, but like just in general, some of the models and things, you know.
Yeah.
Effects.
I was still going to be like, yep, that's one for me. That's what I would recommend. But I kind of like your point of it having to be more recent so that it does look more similar.
Because my pick would be an older one, actually. It would be, I think it was, I might mess this up. I think it was KTA versus Samsung Blue. I think it was 2015 summer. It was the one that was a 5-game series, went back and forth, and they both went into the blind pick Yasuo, but they built differently and played differently, where one was like the aggro Bork Yasuo, and the other one was the slower IE rush, and they fell behind. And like KTA was this insane early game team, and Samsung Blue was this insane late game team, and every game felt it was like riding the edge of like, can they get enough of a lead? Can they hold on? That was a sick series.
I don't have like a specific one in mind, but for me, I think the best way to introduce new players is action back series. Lots of kills, you know, like lots of stuff going on. It's harder to appreciate, I think, the subtleties and like the macro and like more like kind of ethereal style So I would definitely recommend the really kind of like hyped up action back series.
The ethereal style.
I don't know. You know what I mean? The more
ephemeral, ethereal, intangible. I know what you mean.
Yeah,
what was a 2018 FPX versus, was it KT in semi or quarterfinals where they had like the back door and they almost came, it looked like it was going to be a sweep, but then it wasn't a sweep and it was a 5-game series. Is that the one I'm thinking of? That could be a good one too.
Yeah, that'd be a good one.
I would also definitely use one that has big crowd noise, because I think that really draws people in, makes them associate it closely with other live events that you know, they already have kind of good feelings towards, where whatever kind of live event it is, with when you have a big audience and you feel all this emotion, you're like, I don't know what's happening, but I'm emotional too. I'm excited also. What are we doing, guys? Yeah, it's something cool is happening.
Someone find a good Kobe one. One of the ones like the TSM CLG PAX, the PAX one or whatever that was in like 2014, I think. There's a hype one.
We could go back and find which GIFs of like casters are jumping around the most, because after all these action pass series, they got into a strategy of like releasing the cameras of us.
Yeah.
And it would always be like surprising to us too. And there'd be like ones of us like jumping up and down or like slamming the table and stuff. But they always started doing that after they saw the success of some of those, you know, older hype ones that you're talking about. But ever since then, they have a bunch of those.
All right. Well, if you want the hype crowd, you got to watch Wilds.
Wilds.
True.
Wilds. It's Wilds. All right. Next one here comes from Lucas Carstens.
Hey guys, my name is Lucas, calling in from Washington, D.C., and I want to hear what you guys think the most iconic champion that Riot has ever released is and why, and then just for fun, who do you guys think is the most forgettable champion in the game currently?
Ooh, my thought for competitive is immediately Lee Sin. That's the one that jumps to mind. I was talking competitive.
I think Lee Sin, for a lot of people, just hit the skill expression, all the, like, people all, is a he is the jungler. Every jungler learns Lee Sin.
Is he still the most popular? I know for a long time it was actually the most popular champion in all of League of Legends.
I can check right now. I don't know about like what metric, but if you're talking play rate, I can check play rate.
There was a period of time I think he
Caitlyn
was.
He's the most played actually by a lot right now.
Well, I mean, are you sorting by rank as well, though? Aren't you looking at just ranked?
Oh, okay.
Because I was talking about literally in League of Legends games, most popular champion,
like including unranked and stuff. Yeah,
it was back. It was back when they had normal.
Still
games.
Still Caitlyn, even with for unranked, it's still Caitlyn.
Yeah,
but Lee Sin is still really really popular.
Yeah, I was gonna say the other one I think for iconic could just be Ahri. Like she's probably the most popular champion in the greater, you know, ecosystem of League of Legends and gaming. Whereas Lee Sin, no one really knows who Lee Sin is outside League fans, and I think. That's that could true. Be an argument to be made.
They need to put Lee Sin in a music video.
Yep.
Not fair.
We want to make those skin bucks.
You also need to make it an attractive cosplay character, which Lee Sin is hard to pull off for a lot of dudes.
Yeah, true.
I'm not ripped. I can't do it.
All right. The most forgettable?
You forgot.
Yeah.
Think of the most forgettable thing.
What's the thing that you don't remember?
Honestly, it has to be one of the one of the boring champion kits, but a lot of those are first in line for reworks.
Well, and they're also beginner champs. There's got to be like
Alawi. Yeah. That's my answer.
Alawi, what's the lowest play rate? Just look at lowest play rate
is Talia.
Alawi is pretty low.
I was going to guess Aurelion Sol or something.
Talia is the lowest play rate right now in both normals and ranked. Aurelion Sol is Alawi, there, so is Ivern,
Alawi also
so
doesn't like jump around or anything. You know, it's very rare to have a champion that doesn't have dashes. You get a mini dash in your queue.
It's also just like Alawi didn't even have a moment. You know what I mean? I feel like no one ever cared about Alawi. It never had like there's like a couple times in pro play where it was like a niche counter pick, but it never had like an Alawi meta. It's been a good champion at times.
Overbuff Alawi.
But just no. I feel like no one ever cared. I've never heard anyone talk about like sick Alawi skins or it being like.
She's. Yeah. I know you guys talked about before about Riot having the philosophy of like we're gonna make a champion maybe a little overtuned on release so people actually get to play it and see if it's their champion. You know, because if it comes out and it's weak, people might not even pick it up. I wonder if Alawi was the blueprint for why they did that, because
Alaya like was strong. Saying,
she's never had her moment, though. She never had her moment. Whereas every other champ feels like it's had a moment.
Do you guys have a better answer?
Agree.
No.
If it wasn't for Flowers, I would try and
Skarner.
Say like Skarner.
Yeah,
or,
but Skarner was really popular and competitive for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Remember, no quick silver sash. He is down.
Udyr has a big place in my heart. So
also, he was there in the beginning. You know, like maybe he's fallen out of relevancy, but.
Yeah. Honestly, I'm on board with Alawi.
Yeah.
Unless there's Yorick. What about Yorick? Because he got a rework and people still don't play him.
I feel like he's more of a niche popularity.
And, I mean, he's now probably as popular as Alawi, but he did have the moment when it was targeted Q or E and E and W or whatever his old one was, where his E healed him and you just built mana item and you just E'd people over and over in lane. And he was actually
Yorick
like,
is my best possible other answer. But
he at least had a moment in competitive.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. We got one more here, I do believe. This one is from Thomas Lukashow.
Hey, guys. So after the results of this past week, everyone agrees Doublelift did not look great. We even argued that he has been just a serviceable AD this split, but with roster swaps, I guess that's probably a bit harder to argue right now. But with that said, my question is Doublelift only worth having on your team if you have dedicated tools around him?
Caller goes on to ask, you know, is Doublelift wasted also on TSM if they're not playing around him a little bit? What do you guys think?
I mean, if you're expecting 1v9 carry of a game Doublelift, then I guess you could say it's wasted on a team that isn't going to like be camping for bot and playing with a lane dominant support and all this sort of stuff. I can see that argument, but that's also kind of saying that it's like, it's not valuable to just have a good player, even if you're not playing around him, right? Like, even if he's not hard carrying every game, this guy was still in competition for All Pro. You know, he got number four in voting. So wherever you want to place him, he's still one of the better marksman players in the league. And that's still useful to have on any team. As far as like, is he wasted? There's probably a team that, you know, could have played more like heavily around him. And maybe he would have looked better in that case, I guess.
I think the thing that I'm sort of feeling with this question, though, is also what he said in that interview about him and Treats, not necessarily, I think, I don't want to put words in his mouth because I admit that I didn't watch it. This was like trying to parse Reddit comments, interpreting his own words, but it was something about him and Treats not seeing the game exactly the same way in terms of level of aggression. I think,
well, I think that it was more, I
didn't even
to
watch
it. It was
it.
More like that
I watched.
In scrims versus on stage, right? He was basically saying that Treats is like more afraid to trade and play aggressively like he would in a scrim on stage, which is making them kind of sit back and
did you watch it as well? Cause I watched it.
I watched it. Yeah.
Okay. Is that accurate? Kobe, can you confirm?
I don't remember like specific scrim talk. But he definitely used a lot of we in addition in talking about we, you know, play differently and expressing that he wants to play lane dominant. He did explicitly say that.
And so this is what I remember the most when, you know, about Doublelift a lot of the time is that he is really down to trade. Like when we scrimmed against him way back in the day, him and Afro would walk up and fight you to the death level one every game. And they would have their jungler coming down at level three. And so either you sacked wave priority and just accepted like, okay, we're not going to scrap them, or you scrap them and then their jungler comes and ganks you, so then you need to bring your jungler. And they made the whole game about early like their bot lane because they just played this way in scrims all the time. I think they've grown out of that a little bit, even on in the Team Liquid days where he was still clearly the primary carry. I don't think that it's quite so myopic in the way that they play, but I still think that's where he's at his best. And so I can kind of understand the caller's point, hearing this Treats interview, that like Doublelift wants to play aggressive. He definitely wants to be, I think, the focal point of the team for play style and how he approaches the game. And I can understand the viewpoint that he's maybe a little wasted if you're not able to do that. But I don't think it's fair to say that he's wasted on TSM because he's clearly still a good player to Azale's point.
Yep. All right. Well, one final thing I'm going to throw in here. I have a report this week. It's going to be Mark. Time have we, in how many years have we had someone take a phone call on the dive?
Wait. You guys, I've definitely seen other people get a phone call from someone.
No.
And
never.
They had to
not
pick
once,
it up.
Not once on the dive. What have we been doing it for? 4 years now, Kobe?
Yeah.
You guys,
It's pretty rude, honestly. I'm offended.
You guys, offended I know for a fact you guys have gotten phone calls and had to like look at it and turn it off because you didn't have your thing on silent.
Maybe someone had a ringer, but you answered the phone call, Mark. This has never happened before.
It was important.
This is unprecedented.
It was very important.
His defense is, I know for a fact, I've seen someone look down and quickly mute their phone. Like, how is that same? What?
I'm saying mine was less disruptive, is what I'm saying. You're talking about being rude. How about muting? Why? I muted myself. No one would even know. The podcast listeners wouldn't even know if you didn't call attention to it.
You didn't even know what we were talking about.
I knew what you guys were talking about. It was the team.
All right, that's a hard report. Kobe doubles it up. So Mark,
I'm getting 9x.
You're getting some sort of penalty for next week. But that'll do it for this week's episode of The Dive. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you, Honda, for making it possible. It's another 100-minute episode, I do believe. Playoffs resume tomorrow. Remember, it's another 4-series week, so it starts on Thursday. FlyQuest taking on the reigning champions, Cloud9. Make sure you catch us live with the games. That's going to be starting 12:30 PST for countdown, 1 p.m. PST for the game start.